It's Curtain Call. I'm Charles Sipos. In today's program, we talk about theater. I chat first with director Elizabeth Craven and actors Laura Jorgensen and Sam Coughlin. We talk about Amy Herzog's 4,000 Miles, September 3rd through 27th at Main Stage West in Sebastopol. Next, director Argo Thompson and actors Kimberly Callenber and Peter Downey preview David Lindsay Abaire's Good People, September 4th through 19th at Left Edge Theater at Wells Fargo Center for the Arts. Finally, director Nathan Cummings and actors Maria Mikhaylenko and James Pfeiffer talk about Cy Coleman's City of Angels, September 4th through 20th at Cinnabar Theater in Petaluma. All this comes up next on today's Curtain Call. It's Curtain Call. I'm Charles Sipos. In this segment of today's program, we're speaking with director Elizabeth Craven and actors Laura Jorgensen and Sam Coughlin about Amy Herzog's 4,000 Miles, which is running from September 3rd through 27th at Main Stage West in Sebastopol. Welcome, Beth.
Good morning, and thank you so much. I guess it's afternoon, right?
It's morning.
Thank you so much.
It's hard to tell, but it is morning. Hi, Laura. It's good to have you on again.
Hi, nice to be here.
And welcome, Sam.
Thank you.
So what is this play, 4,000 Miles by Amy Herzog?
This is a play about generations. It's a play about human relationships. It's funny and moving. It's one of those plays that come around rarely where the characters drive the entire action of the play, much like a Chekhov play in a way. Mm. It's about a 91-year-old grandmother whose 21-year-old son bikes across the United States and shows up at her West Village apartment one night. Wow. And they spend about a month together. And wow. Their lives change as a result of it.
So does she know he's coming?
No.
He just shows up.
It's a complete surprise.
Wow. And I bet it's a surprise that he's done it via that mode of transportation.
Well, she knew he was on a bike trip, but had no idea he was coming to see her.
Okay. So, Sam, what character are you playing?
I'm playing the grandson, Leo Joseph Connell. So I'm the one who, and it's actually somewhat like my own life, who turns up on people's doorsteps grinning with a bicycle and asking for a place to stay.
Sweet. So you can relate to this part.
Yeah, in certain ways. And then there are certain ways after weeks of rehearsal where it's still a total mystery. But I guess that's the nature of it.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Laura, who is your character?
I'm playing Vera, the 91-year-old grandmother.
I can really totally imagine this. Yeah. Imagine you're playing that.
So I'm playing the Vera Joseph is her name, and she's lived in this apartment in the West Village forever. Her husband has died about 10 years ago, and she has a few neighbors, and she's quite a lefty, a progressive, and a peacenik.
Makeup.
Oh, no. Actually, I can do it now without the makeup.
I know, but this is radio.
Oh, I meant on stage.
We're going to have to put a few years on you to make you 91 years old.
Very wrinkly over here.
Okay, well, we'll imagine that. Why don't you give us a piece of that straight away and so we can get a flavor of what we're talking about.
Okay, this scene that they're going to read is happens early in the play, right after he shows up. And she's put her teeth back in and her hearing aid back in, and she's come out, and they're there in the living room.
I knew you were sleeping well because you didn't wake up when I brought your, out of your room. Oh, moaning and groaning. That thing must weigh 100 pounds.
Nah, about 20.
Is that all?
Well, that's one of four bags. Total weight's about 50.
50 pounds?
More when I have food and water.
And you keep all that on your bicycle?
Yep.
Doesn't that make it a lot harder?
Yeah. Yep, that's a yes.
and you camped at night, is that it?
Usually. Sometimes I'd meet someone and be invited to crash.
You ever meet anyone really peculiar?
What do you mean?
Oh, I don't know, like some crackpot who wanted something weird from you in exchange for a place to stay or whatever. What do you call it? Something sexual or what? Well, I would think on the road like that by yourself, you'd meet all kinds of people.
I did meet all kinds of people. None of them required sexual favors from me, no.
Well, if you were a woman, probably would have been different. You probably would have run into all kinds of things like that.
I know a lot of women who travel alone. Beck has done a lot of traveling
alone. Well, all right. I mean, if you're built like that, but I was meaning a smaller woman.
I find if you approach people with love and trust, you can count on getting the same things back from them.
What is that? Confucius?
It's Leo Joseph Connell. It's me.
I'm teasing you.
Okay.
Guess it's a sensitive subject.
Nope.
Well.
You know anything about a climbing wall?
A what?
A climbing gym.
What's a climbing gym?
It's a gym where you climb. They have these walls with...
Oh, with the funny, and you're in one of those, what do you call it?
Harnesses.
Right, I've seen that. Oh, where did I see that? I saw that, and I thought, what the hell is that for? you want to go today? Is that it?
I was thinking about it. Get the old upper body back to work.
Yeah.
Hey, I was wondering if you could spot me a few bucks for climbing?
Oh, you're out of money, is that it?
At the moment, the flow is low.
Well, how much do you need?
Well, I don't know what prices are like around here. I have to rent all this stuff, so like 50?
$50?
That's what it would be in Seattle, so I guess maybe a little more.
More than $50 to climb up a wall?
I'm expecting an influx in a couple days so I could pay you back.
A what?
An influx of cash into my account.
From where? From your mother. Is she still giving you money?
Forget it.
No, listen.
Forget it. It's no big deal.
Okay. Well, this shows a big difference in generations in terms of sensibilities and language. And I can imagine that the play goes on from there.
It does. And I actually misspoke. This was the next morning. It wasn't right after he showed up. Yeah, actually, there is that difference in language between the two generations. And one of the things I think that I find very interesting about this play is how the difference allows for more communication and not less.
How so?
Well, the character of Leo has a great deal of trouble with his mother. And I think because his grandmother's so much farther removed from his daily life, he's able to hear what she has to say in a way that he may not accept it right away, but it penetrates in a lot better way.
Was Leo seeking that consciously or unconsciously?
Possibly unconsciously. He grows up a lot during this month.
That's a good question. I was talking with my parents the other day, and whenever I say, you know, the rehearsals are going such and such, and they always say, like, well, what does your character want? I'm always like, oh, my goodness. I don't know yet, you know. So, you know, there is something about, I'm not sure if it's consciously or unconsciously, but I'm sort of asking for her approval. Maybe approval isn't exactly the word. Almost like I'm asking for permission to feel the things that I feel and to do the things that I do, which I'm definitely not getting from my immediate family and my everyday life, you know.
I guess what I was getting at is your character Spike Tripp a quest? And was he aiming to be with his grandmother, or consciously or unconsciously? And it'd be really interesting to kind of play with that. So what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, I've certainly in my early 20s and right up through my mid 20s now, I searched and am searching for some sort of ritual, which they talk about in the play, the importance of rituals towards the end. And I think Leo's searching for a ritual that he can look back on and say, this is the concrete point at which I became a man, you know, or maybe that's just me, but you know, so this bike trip in a way is ritualistic. And then this sort of devastating event takes place on the bike trip. And
before you meet with your grandmother?
Before I meet my grandmother, which then alters the course and the meaning of the ritual, you know. And so instead of going to my, you know, my girlfriend's house in New York with, you know, my intention on the other side of this ritual, I end up totally out to sea, you know. So it's kind of interesting.
Out to sea meaning what?
You know,
adrift?
The expectation, very much adrift, yeah. The expectation is left so unfulfilled. And
the expectation of the trip?
Of the trip, yeah. And so I'm sort of casting about. And so it's interesting. You know, I don't think Leo has any intention of going, maybe going and saying hello to Grandma, but certainly not of going and staying with Grandma Vera, and certainly not the intention of needing something from her. You know, I think that comes about through the strange, you know, eddies and weird things that life does that leads us off, you know, not to the sea, but into these strange mountains. You know, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what I'm describing. I have a tendency to do this. But so, you know, it is a quest, certainly, but it's not the quest that I had in mind at all, you know.
So, Laura, how do you develop your character, the grandmother, and how do you, I should say, do you consciously balance this naivete of the modern world and the great wisdom that you've acquired in 90 some years?
Oh, those are good questions. I think for Vera, she still has a dial phone, and she uses the yellow pages, and she, you know, gets around on the subway. She doesn't use a computer. She has a lot of old values that, when they're imparted to Leo, it kind of wakes him up in a way, unexpectedly, I think.
And are those ideas and values imparted consciously, or is it just who you are? Is it just that you're kind of spilling them out with this opportunity of having your grandson land on your doorstep?
Well, it's a big opportunity for her, because she's been, I think she's lonely most of the time. I mean, she doesn't have a lot of friends and that are still living. And so she has this opportunity with her grandson there to have a lot of conversations about what she believes in, even though she has a very difficult time getting the words out. She can't find the right words. And she says, I probably say, what do you call it, about 50 times in the script. And she has difficulty getting her own words out, but they do come across, and just it's her life and who she is that I think affects Leo the most, and rather than giving him some very pointed lessons, you know, verbally.
Yeah, we recognize these lost young people, and we recognize these lonely older people who have so much to offer, and yet maybe you have to read between the lines. And I hear that that's part of this play.
It is.
Beth, you're...
No, it is definitely a huge part of the play. And of course, as they become more and more familiar with one another, they begin to bicker and argue like other people do. And you see them getting closer and closer to being able to have real, authentic communication. She's more accepting, probably, of a lot of his behavior than his parents are. She finds the condoms in his backpack, and she's like, oh, I'm so glad you had these. Surprised they're not open. You know? And so, yeah, I think definitely it's about that opportunity that exists between the older generation and young people that so rarely we take advantage of.
Hmm. Do you know what the inspiration for this play was for Amy Herzog?
I do not.
Is it autobiographical in any way? Do you know?
I don't know. I would be surprised if it wasn't, because that's her area of the world. She's a young playwright. She's one of the playwrights that came out of the Yale playwriting program. And I would be surprised if it wasn't, but I don't know for a fact if it is.
Mm-hmm. Like so many great plays, it touches us in ways that we relate to people that we know, I think, just mm-hmm. from hearing this little snippet. So Sam, do you have a grandmother in your life who you can relate to in working on your character for this play?
My grandmother passed away when I was young, the only one that made it to see me that I ever met.
Grandmother figure then?
You know, I honestly couldn't tell you, but it was
so are you learning anything in
Well,
this
I
play
actually
then?
Had an interesting dream the other day in which I was at my old house on Spring Street in Santa Rosa, and my grandmother was there. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, I should, sort of knowing it was a dream and thinking, I should really pay attention to whatever she's going to say, you know. So it's interesting. I don't have a grandmother figure in my life, or
well,
I would say a grandfather
I would say now
figure.
You do.
But now I do.
She's
I'll
right
be
here.
Your grandma.
Yeah, now I have Laura,
it's
and I'm
okay.
really paying attention to what Laura says, you know, because, yeah, I don't know. That was just an interesting little moment to have that. Kind of,
yeah, in a dream too.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
sweet. So, Laura, do you have a young person or young people in your life who you relate to in developing your character for the play?
Well, I have two sons and I have grandchildren now who are quite young, but I'm kind of so I'm like not quite at that age where I can impart real wisdom to a 4-year-old, but I also reflect a lot on my. I call her my mother outlaws, my ex-husband's mother who died recently at 98. And she really was, you know, giving a lot of knowledge to people. And I kind of use her as a touchstone for this.
The play is 4,000 Miles. It's by Amy Herzog. It runs from September 3rd through 27th at Main Stage West in Sebastopol. Let's give away a pair of tickets. We will take caller number 3 to 584-2020. 584-2020 is the number. Caller number 3 gets the tickets. And I want to thank my guests for coming in. Director Elizabeth Craven, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Laura Jorgensen, thank you.
Thank you.
And Sam Coughlin.
Thanks much.
It's been a pleasure. It's Curtain Call. I'm Charles Sipos.
One night to be confused, one night to speed up truth. We had a promise made, four hands and then away. Both under influence, we had divine said to know what to say. Mind is a razor blade, to call for hands of above.
It's Curtain Call. I'm Charles Sipos, and it's a pleasure to be talking about a brand new theater company called Left Edge Theater. Its home is at Wells Fargo Center for the Arts, and its very first show is Good People, September 4th through 19th. With me to talk about it are its founder and director, Argo Thompson. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
And two actors, Kimberly Callenberg. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Peter Downey, welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Great to have you all on. And first of all, let's talk about West Edge Opera. West Edge. I know there's West Edge Opera, and it's so easy for me to say that. West Edge Theater.
It's actually Left Edge, but we thought for a while about West Edge. We thought about West Coast. We thought about
okay, let's left get it coast. Straight. It's actually good to distinguish this.
Sure.
Because yeah. there's so many of those.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is it?
Left Edge.
Okay, Left Edge. I really like Left Edge. Okay, Left Edge Theater, right?
Perfect.
With an R-E at the end?
That's right.
Okay. So that's important when you go to the website. You have to spell it right.
That's correct.
So sometimes theater is spelled E-R at the end, and sometimes it's R-E at the end. In this case, with Left Edge Theater, it's R-E.
Right.
So Left Edge Theater,
right.
R-E.com.
Yes.
Okay.
I thought one of the distinctions between theater and theater were that ER was the building and an RE was a troupe of
really?
Performers. Yes. That's what I learned. That's why we
Yeah, that's
it.
Actually
You learn something new every day.
I've never knew that.
Yeah. Even you who have been in the theater for all these many years, right?
Right.
Argo taught it to me. That's how I learned it. Years ago, he says.
You don't have to say theater. Theater. It can just be theater.
Okay, so what was the inspiration for Left Edge Theater?
I've been out of the scene for a while, and I noticed
we
a
missed
trend.
You, by the way.
Thank you. I missed being here. I noticed a trend towards less and less contemporary theater, less shows that were provocative in their thoughts, and more musicals and more chestnuts of plays, and that was not the type of theater that I was championing for. When I was around, and a few of my ex-subscribers and supporters said, you need to do something about this. Around the same time, my wife said, you got to do what you love. So it all kind of converged. And of course, I've been dreaming about it for about 10 years now. Well, if I had a theater again, what would I do differently? And what would we do? What type of work? And so, yeah, it's just the types of work that really, that I gravitate to are thought-provoking. They're humorous, usually, but they pack a punch, and the audience goes away thinking about the subject material.
Let's take a moment and just talk about your season. It starts with Good People, September 4th through 19th. The second play that you do is Teresa Rebeck's Seminar, then A Steady Rain by Keith Huff, and then God of Carnage by Yasmina Reza. So do you want to just talk about those for just a moment each?
Absolutely.
Just to give an idea of what we can expect in the season of
sure.
Left Edge Theater.
What they have in common is they're all written in the last 5 years and they've never been produced in Sonoma County before. I did just find out that God of Carnage had a reading in Cloverdale, so I can't really say not produced before, but at least it's a Santa Rosa premiere. That's the type of work that we are focused on. Seminar is a hysterical play about a group of young writers who hire a guru to teach them, and he is seemingly a jerk to them, but then at the end it's, you know, touching. He turns out to have a heart of gold. A Steady Rain is written by a writer for Mad Men and what's the show? Kevin Spacey. On
House of Cards.
Thank you. House of Cards writer. So I saw the writing credit for that and I went, oh, I got to read this. It was made famous a few years back in Chicago, and then they took it to, was it L.A., Peter? Do you know anything about this?
No, I don't. I don't know right. Where it went from there. I know it was in Chicago.
And, yeah, they had some mega stars playing the leads for that, and it was a star vehicle. But it's just two police officers who are in the midst of something that's happening right from the beginning. You don't know who they're talking to. They talk to each other, but they talk to the audience. Sometimes the audience is a hearing board. They're obviously under their own investigation, and it's a wild, crazy ride with just two actors. God of Carnage is four actors. Two couples are brought together because their children had an altercation on the playground, and the parents are there to try to resolve it, but they end up behaving worse than the children.
Oh, man. Okay. they sound all amazing. Okay, the first one of these plays is Good People. It's a comedy by David Lindsay Abair. So talk about that, and then let's hear an excerpt from
Fantastic.
This.
Fantastic, yeah. So David Lindsay Abair, we did a show of his at Actors Theater called Fuddy Mirrors, and then I followed his career intently because I loved the writing. So he's done Rabbit Hole, and now he's writing for several movies. I see his name on the credits of a lot of things. It's a play about a woman who's down on her luck. In the very first scene, she loses her job at the dollar store. I mean, it doesn't really get a lot worse than that. She has an adult daughter that she has to care for. She has some kind of troubles and can't function without assistance. She finds out that her ex-boyfriend from high school is back in town, though now he's a successful doctor. I don't want to give away too many of the details. but they have this scene together in the act one, scene three, and then they have another scene together in act two. And this one, she's just going looking for work.
Okay, so in the studio with us are Kimberly Callenber and Peter Downey. Kimberly, who is your character?
I play Margaret Walsh, and I am the person down on her luck.
Okay.
Most definitely.
And Peter Downey, who is your character?
Mike is the doctor, is the one who escaped from this neighborhood in South Boston and is now back in Boston, but downtown with his doctor's office, and she comes to visit him.
Wow.
At his office.
Okay. And do we need any further setup, or should we just go to it?
I think that does it.
Let's just dive in.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is actors Kimberly Callenber and Peter Downey, who are reading an excerpt from David Lindsay Abaire's Good People, which runs September 4th through 19th at Left Edge Theater, brand new theater at Wells Fargo Center for the Arts.
I haven't been in the neighborhood for a while, but I remember what lace curtain means.
It's a good thing, Mike.
No, it isn't. It means I think I'm better than other people.
That's not what it means.
Yes, it does.
Well, that's not how I mean it.
The old-timers called the Kennedys lace curtain. They don't care about us. They're all lace curtain now.
Well, I don't know anything about that.
Or when a union boss or whoever moved out to Wellesley.
Where do you live?
Not Wellesley.
Brookline? Weston?
Chestnut Hill.
Oh, you're not lace curtain, though. Kid grows up in the old Harbor Project.
Okay.
Moves to Chestnut
okay.
Hill.
Okay.
Oh, Chestnut Hill.
I'm still a Southie kid at heart, though.
Are you?
Yes.
Chestnut Hill. Oh, that sounds nice. Not that I've ever been there, but it sounds nice. Chestnut Hill. A big house?
It's all right.
Oh, humble. I bet it's awesome. That's all I ever wanted was a big house somewhere. You got trees?
A couple.
Sounds nice. You got a guest room? Oh, my God. Mikey Dillon, you're rich.
Hey, take it easy.
You are. You're rich.
I'm not rich.
Well, what do you call it?
I don't know.
Wealthy?
We're just comfortable.
Oh, comfortable.
Yeah.
Oh, you're comfortable. Okay. Oh, I guess that makes me uncomfortable then, huh? Is that what you call us lowly folk, uncomfortable?
Nope.
You're comfortable. I like that. It's nicer than rich. And you look comfortable.
Funny, I don't feel comfortable at this particular moment.
I'm sorry. It's not polite to talk money, is it? Us Southie kids forget that sometimes.
Right.
You ever get back there at all? Walk the sugar bowl? Grab a clam roll at Sully's?
Not really.
How come?
My parents moved to Florida, so there was never a reason to...
Go back?
I don't know. I should, though. I miss those clam rolls.
Well, they're still there.
I've been doing some work with the Boys and Girls Clubs, though. I'm on the board.
Oh, you're on the board.
And I still have cousins in Southie.
The Feenies?
Yeah.
Close to them, are you?
Well,
are they going to be at your party?
You know I was never tight with the Feenies, but that was my father's fault.
You still have ties, though. You're still Mikey D from Old Harbor.
If I was close to the Feenies, they would come to my party.
Oh, yeah? You'd let the Southie rats in?
What are you doing? Do you think I'm lying about the job?
No.
Then why are you being so passive-aggressive?
Oh, okay, big words.
I think you're deliberately needling me.
What did I say?
Did you get mean, Maggie?
No.
Southie girls could get so mean. I remember how hard they were. Your friend Jeannie, forget about it. She could beat the out of me.
Still could.
You would never like that, though. I hope you're still nice, Maggie.
You think I'm not because I called you Lice Carton?
I can't tell.
Because I asked if you invited the Feenies?
If the Feenies want to come, they can come.
I'll let him know. Can I come too? Is that a yes?
You don't want to come to the party, believe me. You'd be bored out of your mind. Bunch of stuffy doctors and their stuffy wives.
Sounds like you need me to liven things up.
Well, you'd certainly do that.
Any of these people hiring, you think?
Oh, and here I thought you wanted to celebrate my birthday.
Yeah, that too.
I'm just a job fair to you.
You know I'm not fussy, Mikey. I'll clean their pools if that's what they got. There's no shame in an honest job.
Well, I don't think I know anybody with a pool.
You don't want me mingling with your buddies. You afraid I might embarrass you?
Is that who you think I am?
I don't know.
You're actually starting to offend me a little bit with all this lace curtain stuff.
Come on, I'm just playing.
You wouldn't embarrass me.
No, I know. You're a good guy, Mikey. I'm just busting balls. You're good people. I always said that about you. You are good people, right?
I like to think so.
Of course you are. helping these babies in here and the nervous parents and volunteering at the boys club or whatever it is you do? Donate money?
A little bit.
See, that's a good guy. Giving money to these kids you don't even know. That's good people. I know you'd help me if you could. I know you would.
You know, you're welcome to come, Maggie. If the party's that interesting to you...
Oh, now I get to come.
I never said you couldn't come.
What'd I do? Bruise your pride?
Yeah, actually, but I'm going to overlook that and invite you anyway.
No, not if I have to guilt you into it.
You're not. I'll tell Denise to give you the directions right now.
The Spanish girl with the boobies?
She's Dominican, but yeah.
Nah, it's okay. I'll let you off the hook.
I see what this is.
What?
You don't actually want to come. You just want me to feel bad.
Why would I want that?
I don't know, but it's weird how you suddenly don't want to come to the party after all. I know Chestnut Hill is a scary place.
Oh, you got that right. All that money in one town.
Suddenly you don't want to hang out with my boring friends.
I'll hang out. I don't care. So long as they want to give me a job. They going to give me a job?
Somebody might. A couple of those guys have done stupider things, but you don't want to come now.
You think I won't?
No. I think you'll say you will. Then call the next day and leave a message saying your kid got sick or something.
Hey, I just wanted a job, Mikey, but... if you want to play a game of chicken, that's fine, too.
I'm not playing anything.
Stop with me.
I'm not.
Because you're very close to hurting my feelings.
Hurting your feelings? Seriously, Maggie, if you want to come, you should come. But stop trying to make me out to be this jackass who's forgotten where he's come from.
When is it?
Saturday night.
I happen to be free Saturday night.
I'm not surprised.
Now, why don't you buzz your girl and tell her I would like directions?
You're not gonna come.
I am now.
Okay.
You don't want me to.
I just invited you, didn't I? Hey, Denise, could you print out directions to my house for Miss Walsh? She'll be coming to the party on Saturday. No, you cannot.
I'll be taking the tea.
Tea directions. Yeah. Thank you. I hope you like salmon.
Never had it.
Well, you're gonna.
All right. This was fun, Mike. Thanks for letting me in.
Like I had a choice.
Yeah. But if you hear anything in the meantime, call me, though, okay? About work. I'll do whatever.
Okay.
See you Saturday.
Will I?
Oh, yeah. You're in deep now, Doctor.
Oh, it's Kimberly Callender and Peter Downey doing an excerpt from David Lindsay Abaire's Good People. It runs September 4th through 19th at the brand new Left Edge Theater. That's R-E. At Wells Fargo Center for the Arts, the Atoll. With me are these two actors, obviously, and their director, Argo Thompson, who is also the founder of Left Edge Theater. This is very exciting. What an auspicious beginning, Good People.
Thank you. Yes. I'm so happy. When I read it, I saved it. So I'm going to do that show, and I'm going to do it first.
Yeah, I'm from Massachusetts, and
that's really a genuine.
It's been a great resource.
Yes, it is so beautiful.
Well, the accent actually plays a bit of a part, but so much of what is kind of the vibrations, the electricity that drives everybody in this play is just natural to me. It's home to me. So it was very fascinating to read it. It was a very, very lovely show to read and be like, oh my God, I know these people.
Yeah. So talk about those vibrations, because some of it is, I'm from kind of the Cleveland area, mm-hmm. and I understand that there are regional vibrations, and I spent a lot of time in Cincinnati, and now I've been here for an age. Okay. So, but I'm not sure I do or ever did understand the Boston vibe, even after all the car talk I've listened to.
Well, this is the thing. Everything is simultaneously funny, and underneath it is this grief. Even if you listen to the car talk guys,
yeah,
they're talking about the fact that it's a constant struggle with whatever vehicle you have that you're going to lose, and they laugh. You're going to lose. And yet somehow that's funny. And that sort of physicality is, and that energy runs through almost every conversation I've ever had with every relative I've ever known from New England. It's this is all futile, so let's laugh on the way down.
Right.
It's kind of the energy that I grew up with in New England.
This hopefulness amidst the, you know, despair.
I mean, like, you're from Cleveland. You know that's a city that's sort of risen and died a couple of times. And where's its death?
In my lifetime.
It's right. Same with every single city in New England, you know, from every, you know, for the last 400 years has risen and died. And it just, there's signs of sort of that death everywhere. And people just sort of push on through.
Kimberly, you said you learned a lot about the accent. Did you learn about the energy too?
I did. Very much from Peter, to tell you the truth.
So talk about how you perceive that energy and how you perceive how it relates to the language and how it got transmitted, or how you took it on in this process of creating this play, Good People.
Well, the energy is, I spent a lot of time in New York City, so there's similarities and yet differences. But there is this, specifically with Margie, I feel her incredible sadness and anger and difficulty all the time, but it's very much capped. And in a strange way, it fuels her to keep going. It's like there's this tremendous survival instinct that's in all of the people in her life. And the humor and the sarcasm and the intensity, they're all very intense. They're not these quiet, gentle folk, actually keeps them alive on a certain level. So it, and sadness and anger and grief is not interesting to watch on stage. So I have to have all of that inside of me driving me forward. But she also has this great optimism and this hope. And I don't think the way they speak to each other, to me personally, is just craziness. But they
say why?
It is.
They're acerbic and rude.
They're rude. They're straightforward. It's New Yorkers to a certain extent, but they don't. That's not how they feel when they're communicating. It's just the culture. It's the nature of the environment. It's what they've always heard and listened to growing up. So to me, it's pretty harsh, and yet it has a lot of love in it and understanding, and so it's just the way they are. And it's hilarious. It's entertaining to watch and to also be a part of.
Well, we could talk about this for the whole hour, and I'd love to, but we have to end it here. The play is Good People. It's by David Lindsay Abaire, and it runs September 4th through 19th at Left Edge Theater, brand new theater at Wells Fargo Center for the Arts. Left Edge Theater is spelled with an ER at the end of theater. And that's important.
Ari.
I beg you. Thank you. Keep me honest. And it's important to make those mistakes so our listeners don't make those mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'd rather make it.
Thanks
theater
for
with
for
an
the team.
R-E, yeah. leftedgetheater.com. And that's where you'll find out about Good People. And it's where you'll find out about the whole first season of Left Edge Theater with an R-E. Let's give away a pair of tickets. It will be listener's choice to your performance between September 4th and 19th at Wells Fargo Center for the Arts. We will take caller number 2 to 584-2020, caller number 2 to 584-2020. I want to thank my guests, director Argo Thompson and founder also of Left Edge Theater. Thanks for coming in.
It was my pleasure. Thank
Welcome
you for
back.
Having us again.
It's so great.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And actor Kimberly Callenberg.
Thank you very much.
And Peter Downey, thanks for coming in again.
What a treat to be here.
I'm Charles Sipos. It's Curtain Call on KRCB Santa Rosa.
Russet brandy in a diamond glass. Everything is made from dreams. Time is made from honey, slow and sweet. Only the fools know what it means. Temptation. 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 I can't resist. Well, I know that he is made of smoke, but I've lost my way. He knows that I am broke.
It's Curtain Call. I'm Charles Sipos. In this segment of Curtain Call, we are speaking about Cy Coleman's City of Angels, which runs September 4th through 20th at Cinnabar Theater in Petaluma. For more information, you can go to cinnabartheater.org, and Cinnabar Theater is spelled with an E-R at the end of theater, cinnabartheater.org. With me to talk about City of Angels are its director, Nathan Cummings, and actors Maria Mikhaylenko and James Pfeiffer. Welcome, Nathan.
Hello.
Welcome, Maria.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
And welcome to you, James.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for coming in. And what is this play, City of Angels?
Oh, City of Angels is a musical comedy. So it is a ton of fun. This is a show that I've been waiting to do a long time. You know, I think as artists, you have those couple shows that you encounter in your life at some point in time. I saw this show when I was in high school when the Broadway tour came through San Francisco. And it's one that's been on my radar, and finally we're able to do it. So City of Angels is a show that takes place in the 1940s. And it is about a New York writer who is fresh off of a successful crime novel that he has written, and he's been co-opted as one as sometimes writers are, to come to Los Angeles to write a screenplay to get his hit book turned into a movie. What makes City of Angels particularly fun is it has a show within the show. So everybody in City of Angels plays two parts. We have the two worlds of Hollywood, the real world, if you will, and then we have the world of the movie. So we get to experience in black and white the film noir movie, the crime novel as it comes to life on the stage.
How do you do a black and white movie in the theater?
Very carefully. So it's really, you know, we do everything on stage will be in tones of black and white with costuming, all the set pieces. So and shades of gray. And then we've got our fantastic lighting designer that will be lighting the two worlds. So we basically have two light plots. We have a color light plot, and then we have a light plot that really accentuates just the idea of that flat black and white in that film noir, those sharp angles and those that really fun kind of experience. Mm.
Okay, I think we're ready to make a scene here. And we're going to count on actors Maria Mikoyenko and James Pfeiffer to do that. Do you want to set this up, Nathan Cummings?
Sure. So this is our introduction to our private eye. The stereotypical hard-nosed stone here, and into his office comes the case of a lifetime, if you will. And we can kind of take it from there.
3 million people in the City of Angels in the last census, easily half of them up to something they don't want the other half to know. We all get sucked in by the lobby. Palm trees finger the sky, and there's enough sunshine to lay some off on Pittsburgh. But that's all on top. L.A., truth to tell, is not much different than a pretty girl with the clap. Monday. What other day works so hard at reminding you not to get your hopes up because it's going to be coming around again real soon? Breakfast is over. Some business just walked in, and she's wearing a whole year's salary.
I know how busy you must be, Mr. Stone. I appreciate your seeing me.
The appreciation was all mine. Just one look, and you knew Alora Villiers was a handful. Maybe two if you played your cards right. She had the kind of face a man could hang a dream on. A body that made Venus de Milo look all thumbs, and only the floor kept her legs from going on forever. Can I be of some help, Mrs. Villiers?
Miss.
Miss Villiers.
I don't know where to begin.
Why don't you start by telling me if your husband knows you're running around pretending to be single?
What makes you think I'm married?
When you slipped your ring off, you forgot how tan you are everywhere else, or at least I imagine you are everywhere else. You want to tell me who you really are now that we've established who you're not?
I'm in trouble, Mr. Stone.
Everyone is. It's only the smart ones who know it.
I'm really the last person in the world you'd expect in this kind of office. I've led a life I'd really think you could call dull. At least I thought so until...
Just watch her dodge the truth like a runaway streetcar. This role she plays could win her a prize. Each gesture is correct, well chosen for effect, and it would be wiser if I kept my eyes off her thighs.
Mr. Stone, are you listening to me?
I will, if you will. Start leveling.
I beg your pardon?
Telling the truth. From the minute you walked in here, every time our eyes meet, you look like a deer caught in my headlights.
Let's just say I've been sizing you up.
All the measurements fit.
This is a very delicate situation, Mr. Stone. Reputations are at stake.
We don't share that problem.
My name is Alora Kingsley. Mrs. Alora Kingsley. My daughter Mallory is missing. Stepdaughter, actually. My husband is a good deal older than I am.
How good a deal.
He's 75. I know how that must sound, but we're very much in love. Mallory's disappearance has been devastating to my husband. He's just not the same when she's not around. It's as though part of him has gone off somewhere, the secret, tender part. She was 16 in the snapshot.
An early developer.
It's not a terribly good picture.
I don't know if I could stand a better one.
You won't need it.
Or this case, Mrs. Kingsley. I've been around the block enough times to already feel myself getting a blackjack facial somewhere down the line or having someone use my ribs for a shoe rack. You get to trust your instincts after a while.
This song and dance of his is most unconvincing. He has that hungry look in his eye. He needs the work and soon some cash will change his tune. He'll hop to the task, I'll say jump, and he'll ask me how high.
So, thanks, Mrs. Kingsley, but no thanks all the same.
Shall we say $100 now, over and above whatever it finally comes to? Mr. Stone, there'll be a considerable bonus when you find her. How considerable will surprise you.
You're talking when. I'm thinking if.
My money's on you. You look like the kind of man who can get the job done.
You want to give me your unlisted number, or do I just dial every possible combination?
It would be better if you didn't call. I'll check with you.
Why'd I get the nod, Mrs. Kingsley? You can't lift a private manhole cover in this town without finding a private investigator.
No special reason. I saw your name in the phone book.
And thus starts City of Angels.
City of Angels. It runs from September 4th through 20th at Cinnabar Theater in Petaluma. I'm Charles Sipos, and we just heard actors Maria Mikhayenko and James Pfeiffer. And in an excerpt from City of Angels, also with me is director Nathan Cummings. Boy, that is a true film noir stylization. I mean, it's so stylized and hyper-stylized.
Yeah, hyper-stylized.
Which is
yeah.
part of where the humor comes in. It's like a cartoon.
It's Philip Marlowe and Sam Spade with a little bit of Lieutenant Frank Drebin, who was Leslie Nielsen's character, thrown in the Naked Gun series. So he's got a little bit of goofiness in there, a little bit, you know, just to soften the edges.
The goofiness really helps.
Yeah.
The piece itself really plays, kind of plays homage to this. It's not it's not a satire. We're not making fun of, you know, film noir, but it really plays into those, to the style of it all and to the heightened feeling and the, you know, the dialogue and the snappy back and forth and the way that they play with their words. Mm.
It's wordplay in the script, and it's even more wordplay hearing you deliver it, because you're picking up on things as you're playing back and forth with each other.
Absolutely. And the writer of the book, Larry Gelbart, is that right?
Yeah.
He was from Los Angeles and had a great fondness for that period in the 40s and wrote this brilliant book. And the lyrics in Cy Coleman's score are also just chock full of wordplay. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a jazz. This is a jazz musical. You know, Cy Coleman, grew up in that era, and he when he was up and coming, he was a jazz musician before he entered the world of musical theater. He had the Cy Coleman Trio, and he parlayed that into popular songs. He wrote Witchcraft and a couple other popular songs, and then he became this really prolific musical theater writer. Really, one of America's true treasures with all of the pieces that he's written, and he always wanted to go back and write a jazz musical because that's really what he considered himself, a jazz musician. So, he always wanted to, and he finally got the opportunity in the late 80s to do this. So it's really, as you can tell, that the music and the book of this piece really are near and dear to both the writers of this piece.
Mm. And let's distinguish too. The music is by Cy Coleman. The book is by Larry Gelbart. And there's a lyricist too, which is so often the case with musicals, because the lyric art is kind of a separate specialty, and the lyrics by David Zappel you can hear that wordplay too, but you have to do more with lyrics than you do, or you have to do something different. Let me say it that way, with lyrics than you do
absolutely.
With a play as a playwright.
Yeah, and Cyclamen he's kind of a little bit of a rarity in the world of musical theater because he worked with many different, you know, usually, the music and the lyricists, they kind of, you know, you hear Rodgers and Hammerstein, they pair up. He worked with many different lyricists throughout his career, and I think that you can kind of hear that in each individual piece that he has. It has this freshness to it because it's almost like he's capturing that first moment with his partner each time.
Mm. So, Maria, do you have models for your character like James does?
Not really, no. I mean, I am a great fan of film noir. And
so how do you source it? Do you just kind of recall what you've seen and recall the feeling that you have when you watch
some film of that is in the back of your consciousness always. But I try not to, as Nathan said, have it be a parody. So
yeah, I didn't take either of your characters as parodies at all. But I took it. I took them as intensifications.
Yes, in
the best sense of the word cartoon. You know where a cartoon is an intensification of something that already exists.
That's a good way to describe it.
Because it is. It's beyond somehow. As intense as film noir was or as musicals are, there's more intensity in the way each of you is playing this.
Yeah,
and part of it is the mingling of humor and drama.
Right.
And part of it is just the intense tasting of film noir. You know, it's right. Like you have that taste in your mouth.
Exactly.
And you just go with it.
Yes.
And you have to be very careful at the same time not to be too flippant with the cliches that you're saying. And you have to deliver them straight so that they're not, you know, punching people in the face with, oh, here's my next funny line. You have to do it very straight so that people can appreciate it.
These are real characters. They're you know, up on the stage, and they
Stone is a very vulnerable, kind of a hard luck case.
Yeah,
you know, he's not just a hard guy. He's had a lot of stuff happen to him.
He has lived a life.
Yeah.
Is that why people are hardened anyway? Is that they have a hard life and then they become hardened because of that? Would you say? James?
I don't know. You know, sometimes I think people are born in the suit that they're going to wear.
So what suit were you born in?
Was I born in personally?
Yeah, just out of curiosity.
I was a pack leader. I have a family that I kind of nurture along and take care of very well, and I enjoy helping people out and providing. That's what I do. I'm a worker bee.
Hmm. Okay. So.
That was my suit.
Maria, what suit were you born in?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I've just always had a passion for all things artistic and singing.
You're a woman of many suits.
Singing music of all genres and tastes.
Are you a singer first or are you an actor first?
I am. I'm a singer. I'm classically trained. I started out as an opera singer primarily and sort of made my way into the world of musical theater, which I always loved but didn't have occasion to perform.
How is musical comedy different than other musical theater? Because this was introduced as a musical comedy, The City of Angels.
Yes.
So how is that different for you?
I think, as James said, you know, these characters in the movie, they are real people. So it's this intensity, but it's also what drives them forward. So they take everything very seriously. And there is that level of comedy, but it's more a dry wit. And the other side of the story, the Technicolor Hollywood characters, the actors who play the characters in the book that the writer has is bringing to the screen, there I find them a little bit more effervescent, brilliant. The flip side of Alora Kingsley's character is Carla Haywood that I play. She is the wife of the Hollywood producer, Buddy Fiddler. And she, obviously the audience knows it's the same actress playing both Alora and Carla, but Alora's very tightly laced up. She knows what she wants. She's that quintessential femme fatale character. And Carla Haywood is a little bit more easy with a laugh, easy with a smile. She's lighter on her toes. So I just sort of approach each character from that standpoint. And we don't play the comedy for comedy's sake. It just naturally comes out of the brilliant writing and the intentions that we're playing.
Is one of your suits a comedian or a comic?
I don't consider myself a comic.
but you have a comic flair, certainly, in how you deliver this, so.
I suppose.
Oh, yes, she does. I don't know what she's talking about.
I'm pretty silly in real life. I have a great sense of humor, but.
Okay, gentlemen.
She may have been the class clown, as far as I know.
James, how about you? Do you have comic bones in your body?
Yes. And they manifest themselves in different ways. I always liked slapstick when I was younger and physical comedy. And now I appreciate more turn of phrase. It's also I'm getting old and I can't do the slapstick anymore very well. So I have to rely on wit.
Well, my guests have been James Pfeiffer and Maria Mikhaenko, as well as director Nathan Cummings. And we've been talking about Cy Coleman's City of Angels, which runs September 4th through 20th at Cinnabar Theater in Petaluma. Let's give away a pair of tickets. We'll take call number 3 to 584-2020. Call number 3 to 584-2020 gets the tickets. If you want more information about Cinnabar Theater's production of City of Angels, you can go to cinnabartheater.org. That's theater with an E-R, in this case, cinnabartheater.org. Cinnabar is spelled C-I-N-N-A-B-A-R, cinnabartheater.org. I want to thank my guests for coming in, Nathan Cummings.
Thank you.
And Maria Mikhaenko.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And James Pfeiffer.
Thank you very much.
I'm Charles Sipos. Join me again next week for another edition of Curtain Call.
You only go around once, and then they chuck you in with a spade. Go out with some style.